Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. We are back with CP of Knicks Fan TV. And Alex, we are getting right back into it, going over the remaining Knicks free agents and determining their best and worst case scenarios.
Yeah, and that includes checking in on Elfrid Payton and whether best case scenario for him is actually playing less. Marcus Morris, whether the best case scenario for him is not being on the Knicks by the end of the year. And Julius Randle and whether his best case scenario is all-star or bust. And all that and more is coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
Elfrid Payton, sort of like a last-minute signing, kind of an interesting one. I mean, I'm the person who always complains that the Knicks built around too many shoot-first guys, and Payton is kind of the ultimate antithesis of that. My worry with him is that, like, the other component I would look for there is a really good shooter, and he is not that guy. CP, I guess, especially after Frank's performance in FIBA, how do you think the point guard position sorts itself out, and I guess like Payton's floor and ceiling like fit into that conversation?
It's another dogfight, another critical position battle that I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I thought Payton, like Portis, was another move in terms of excess. I wasn't necessarily a fan of the pickup because I just feel like we need to, and I'm not gonna make this a Frank Ntilikina telethon, but I just feel like we need to know where we stand with this kid, right? First and foremost, before anything else. And they continue to pile on point guard after point guard, you know, whether it was Moutier, Jared Jack, who came in, who's supposed to be the veteran leader. He ends up getting more minutes than Frank. It's Moutier. It's Trey Burke, who storms all the way up from Westchester, right? It's Dennis Smith Jr. And now you have Payton. So, you know, I didn't like the move. Again, I think it further, you know, puts Frank on the back burner. But, you know, the competition could be good for Frank. From a Payton standpoint, obviously, you like the fact that he can run an offense. You know that. I think he's been proven to do that from a supporting cast role. We know that that's a guy that Perry has coveted from last season before they got in on Moutier. He did want Payton. They have the relationship from Orlando. I think best case scenario, and Alex, you and I were talking about it earlier. I think best case scenario is him to be the backup point guard to DSJ. I think if this team wants to have anything of a remotely successful season, not saying playoffs or anything, but just a season that you can hang your hat on, I think DSJ has to be the one that takes that leap and helps to be a leader on this team along with Randle. And I think if Payton beats him out in camp, I don't necessarily see that as a good sign, especially from the point guard position.
Yeah. You know, you alluded, we were talking about this on Twitter earlier, like actually the worst case scenario for me for Elfrid Payton is that he wins the starting job. Because that's one position where I feel like, you know, with DSJ, a lot of people will believe that DSJ is a guy that can potentially make a leap this year if he can, you know, fix up his jumper and, you know, get fully integrated with this team finally, you know, like get comfortable and everything. He showed some real flashes after he got here last year. So you would hope that with a camp and a whole summer to work on stuff and all that, that, you know, he would be ready to rock and ready to take that starting job. So I think my best case with Payton is that he would prove that he could play backup point guard well enough, like to the point where some team that's desperate for like either a really good backup or even a starter, you know, that has someone go down with injury or something, trades for him and says like, you know what, this is a guy that can start for us. He can play defense. He can, you know, score a little bit. Mostly he can pass. you know, that's exactly what we need right now. You know, let's say it's I don't know, try to like the Jazz or something like that. You know what I mean? Let's say, God forbid, you know, Conley goes down and Emmanuel Mudiay is not cutting it out there. Maybe they call up the Knicks and say, you know, hey, we want Elfrid Payton. And then, you know, maybe like, because Utah is going to be a playoff team, the Knicks could snake a late first round pick or something for Payton in that scenario, especially because he has that second year option. So that would be my ideal for Payton. It's nothing against the guy. I feel a lot better about the incumbent options that were here before than I do about the, you know, the prospect of him coming in and sort of taking the reins of everything.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. I mean, like, the super best case is that he figures out how to shoot, because I mean, if he was like a plus shooter, he would be
shooting is abysmal.
Yeah, no, it's awful. That's the thing. He would be like a top 12 point guard in the NBA. The issue with that is, like, along with Ricky Rubio, like, he's like one of the worst shooters at the position ever in like the modern era of basketball, and that's a big issue when you want to be an NBA player. So I think just any scenario, obviously I don't want him to get hurt, but that like clears room for Frank and DSJ and like allows the Knicks. I mean, the whole thing with those two guys is like I just want to get a gauge for what they are. And with Frank, like whether it's been because of like nagging injuries last year or him just not being good enough offensively to like sustain him on the floor, or the Knicks not giving him a fair chance, we've never gotten to see what he is. And like I harp on that point and I make it again and again and again on this podcast, but signing Payton, I mean, to me was just indicative of like the Knicks don't think of Frank Ntilikina as a real part of their future, and they're like not necessarily inclined to give him that chance, or at least they're going to make it as hard on him as possible. And I'm hoping FIBA sort of made them rethink that and give him a fair shot to beat out Payton. So to me, just any scenario that involves Elfrid Payton not playing over those two guys, I'm kind of okay with.
I got killed for it on Twitter. Knicks Twitter killed me for it when Fran Fraschilla, I think, was the one that it was talking about Frank's FIBA play and was saying that he will probably have a better career after the Knicks. And I agreed. I said I think maybe the timing and the fit is not right for Frank here. And everybody killed me. Like, how could you say that? How could you say the fit? He can fit with anyone. And I said, it's not about how Frank fits with the current roster. It's like, how much more do you need to see between the acquisitions that they've made and his ineffectiveness over the last 2 years to be optimistic about his future?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm just hoping... I've said, and you know, maybe you can comment on this. I've had this belief that I think that things are a little overblown with the Knicks supposedly hating Frank. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first thing. I think, and I've said this on our show before, I maybe even said it on your show once or twice. I think that Frank confuses Fizdale. I don't think Fizdale knows what to make of him. He's like, you've got skills, you can play defense, but you're not like my favorite type of player. Yeah. Like Fizdale loves these like attacking, slashing guards that, you know, just want to get into the paint and score and shoot and, you know, dribble and, you know, break down guys in ISO and stuff. And that's just not Frank's game. And it never will be. And so, but I do think that, I mean, Fizdale's going to give Frank, just like I think everybody else, honestly, I think they're going to run in with open camp this year again, just like they did last year. And they're going to say every spot's up for grabs and Frank will get a shot. And like everybody forgets, but Frank won a starting job out of camp last year. And Fizdale gave that to him and was like, he earned it, man. Like he shot well in preseason and, you know, we're going to start him as small forward, which was, you know, maybe not ideal, but it was something. And then he started a point guard for a little bit of the season. And then, you know, every time after that, after those DMPs, you know, he had a couple stints where he started to play well and then got hurt and then started to play well and then got hurt. And that was just kind of the whole thing. So like, I think it's a little overblown. I also don't know how much truth there was to the reports that the Knicks would have been willing to deal him for like a second round pick. I feel like that was probably put out there by other general managers or something. Cause that just doesn't seem right to me based off how they talk about him and how they, you know, outwardly project about him. I think they actually like him quite a bit more than that, but I guess we'll see. I don't know. It's turning into a whole separate discussion.
Yeah.
Beating the drum about Frank here. But I don't know. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Like, do you think that they actually dislike him as much as is reported?
I don't know if it's dislike. I just think it's confidence. Like you said, with Fizdale, he definitely did not know how to use him last year. And I feel like he did go on record as saying that he didn't even know what position that he could use him best at last year. And again, I mean, they prioritized Moutier over him last year. Trey Burke, Jarrett Jack, you know, they bring in DSJ, and now they bring in Elfrid Payton, who, like I said, as we know, is Perry's guy from Orlando and somebody that they wanted, from what we've heard, wanted prior to them getting Moutier. So I just feel like Gavin had said, I felt like they should have went into this thing with a DSJ, Frank, Camp battle, and you know, so that we can see exactly what we have in these guys. We got Frank in the same draft as DSJ. We got DSJ in the Kristaps Porzingis trade. I think it behooves us to get the most out of these guys and to give them the biggest opportunity to fail.
And I mean, to that point, like I'd be perfectly happy with Kadeem Allen as the third point guard. They didn't desperately need to bring in a fourth dude. They had someone who proved himself at least to be, I mean, I would argue, I mean, maybe some other teams don't feel this way, an NBA player. So it's not like they were just desperate at that spot. So it didn't make any sense to me, but I guess they had the money. So we'll see how it goes.
Hey, are you in the New York area and looking to promote your business to a young, predominantly male demographic?
Then Locked On Knicks is the podcast for you. 80% of our listeners fall between the ages of 18 and 44, and 98% of those listeners are male. As the top Knicks podcast on the market, we offer a unique opportunity to engage with basketball fans in the city.
If interested in an ad spot or live read, email lockedonknicks@gmail.com for more information on pricing and availability. Our rates are very affordable compared to radio and offer a chance to reach an audience on an ever-growing platform.
Marcus Morris, someone who Alex mentioned signed under sort of strange circumstances, probably the first guy to pick the Knicks over the Spurs in quite some time. Obviously, a little bit more money on the table. And I said it when they signed him. I think you can make an argument he's the best player on the Knicks from day one. I mean, I'd certainly make a case for Mitchell Robinson, maybe even Julius Randle and Alonzo Trier. I know some people would argue over him, but I think as far as two-way impact, like let's put it like this. There isn't a guy on this team who's better at offense and defense than Marcus Morris. And I think that makes him valuable. And I think that means he has a very distinct and clear role on this team. I've seen some people mention that Knox could start ahead of him. I'd be shocked if at the beginning of the season, Knox is starting ahead of him. But CP, how do you think he fits into this mix? And do you think he bumps off some of the other sign the Knicks had? Do you think he limits the minutes of guys like Knox and RJ right off the bat? And I guess just sort of what's his role on this Knicks team?
I agree with you 100%. I love this move when they got him. I couldn't believe that he would ditch the Spurs for the Knicks. I still can't believe it. No matter the contract, but I'm glad we have him. Best two-way player on the team, no doubt about it. I think he gives us a much-needed veteran presence, another high IQ vet that we can slide in there and help these young guys. He can spread the floor. He's multidimensional. Obviously, he can play a little three, maybe the four, maybe his best position. And in a pinch, or depending on lineups, maybe you go with him at small ball five. I love the pickup. In terms of him and Knox, I think if we're going to look at it as an asset, right, and we're still in the asset acquisition phase, I would say maybe put him in the lineup. If he doesn't kill you at the three defensively, I would say throw him in the lineup with the hopes of trading him by the deadline, because I think he's the only asset of the guys that we picked up that could yield you the highest return.
So would you say that's probably your best case scenario?
Best case scenario. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so as well. I think that's probably my best case for him, which kind of sucks because I want to like him more and want him to be here for a long time. But I think he will have more than served his purpose if he comes in here. He provides, like, because really, like, if we're talking about realistic potential outcomes for Kevin Knox, you know, as far as the ceiling goes, Marcus Morris could be it.
Right.
I mean, Morris came in as kind of a chucker. I mean, it's easy to forget, but he came in as a guy that wasn't super well regarded defensively. His brother was better regarded defensively, Marquise.
That's right.
And Marcus has actually, ironically, become, I would say, the better defender and better overall player of the two, despite, you know, early in his career looking like he was never really going to be that. So I would say that, you know, I would want him to be a good mentor to Kevin Knox and, you know, play some good minutes. The only time I would be like, let's not trade him is if the Knicks are legitimately trending towards the playoffs and it doesn't look like total fool's gold. And keeping him would be beneficial, like if he's like a huge rotation player. But other than that, if, you know, predictably, if the Knicks look like they're going to miss the playoffs, ship him out. I mean, it sucks, but send him off somewhere. A guy like him always has value to a contender. And even though they wouldn't get a ton of and actually what kind of works in a contender's favor if they pick him up, even if they're capped out.
Right.
Is that because of non-bird rights? Which is just when you sign a guy to a 1-year contract, you can pay him up to, I think it's 125% of his previous salary. But since the Knicks overpaid him, you know, that could actually work for a contender because then they could say, oh, well, we'll just sign him to a 3-year deal at $12 million a season, which is probably his actual market value. And, you know, then he could potentially be with a contender for years to come. Maybe even the Spurs, who knows? That would be a sick move if the Knicks could somehow trade Morris to the Spurs.
Back to the Spurs.
Eventually, somewhere down the line. Get him to where he was always destined to be.
I was imagining like Greg Popovich like cursing under his breath and just being like, all right, fine, just do it. Just fucking just do it.
That's my best case. Worst case is that he falls out of the rotation, just expires at the end of the year, didn't even contribute to anything, and that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I could see him just like on the court, like being sort of the glue of this Knicks team. Like maybe this is a little bit generous to him, but like he's kind of the one guy outside of, I guess I would put Mitch in this category, but that's like an above average NBA player on both sides of the floor. And with all the weaknesses you're going to have, like on mostly on defense and like with a couple guys on offense, I just think you need that. And if the Knicks want to be anything close to competent, I think they need him playing like 32, 33 minutes a night. And I think he'll be like when the Knicks are somewhat competitive, if they are somewhat competitive, I think he'll be a big part of it. So to me, like his ceiling is almost in terms of contributing to winning is almost higher than Julius Randle, unless Randle somehow got a lot better defensively this offseason. I genuinely believe he could be like either the MVP or the second MVP of this year's Knicks team. And look, if Marcus Morris is going to be that guy, your team isn't in a great position to begin with. But I do believe the upside is pretty high with him. And unless there's like off the court stuff, which he's had in his career, and like locker room stuff, it seems like he's more mature. I just don't see the downside being that great because I just can't imagine a world where the Knicks couldn't immediately trade him for a second round pick if anything went south.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. And let's go for some wins. I mean, yeah, I definitely want to make sure that the young guys get their opportunity. But I also think that let's try to pick. Listen, we won 17 games last year, man. I want to get off to this season on a high note and have this team shooting for the stars, whatever it may be. If it's an A seed, if it's 9 seed, whatever it may be, I want to go for some wins. And so I think putting him in that lineup, in the starting lineup, gives you a bit more balance, especially if depending on who you're going to put out there on the perimeter, you may not be strong defensively there. I think padding Randle between Morris and Mitch also kind of solidifies the front court from a defensive standpoint. And like I said, just brings you that balance. And as you said, Gavin, from a worst case scenario, yes, he's had a bit of a pass in terms of his emotions. Remember him and Hornacek got into it a couple of years ago in Phoenix. You know, does it go like the Portis route, or if he falls out the rotation, becomes a malcontent? He certainly matured over the years, but that would certainly be my worst case scenario.
All right, Julius Randle, let's get into it. I'm not even going to tee you up with a question, CP. I think he's sort of spoken for. What do you think about him?
Best case scenario is an all-star bid, man. I think that would be the best case scenario for Julius Randle. He's gotten better every season since he's come in. If you think about his rookie year, it's really a redshirt year. He got injured in the first season. And I think this is a guy we may have finally gotten a guy – who's still ascending from a free agency standpoint. He's only 24 years old. Like I said, what did he average? About 21-9 last year. Shot the best that he's ever shot from three ball, I think close to 40%. So for me, Randall, best case scenario, he's an all-star, man.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too, honestly. I want to see him, if we're doing this like Mamba Challenge style, like I want to see him be like a 23-10 player this year, something like that. Maybe even more than that. You know, I want to see him average 10 boards a game though, for the second time in his career. He did do that his second year in the league. Well, technically his first year in the league because he only played 14 minutes that first year.
Right.
Before like breaking his leg, but I want to see him do that again. I would really like to see him again keep at least plateau his 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
But I also want to see him try to average a career high in assists this year. You know, if he can do all those things and make an all-star bid, that's best case scenario for me. Worst case scenario is he regresses. That would be the worst possible thing. If he regresses, if the burden is too much for him, you know, kind of being, because they're going to lean on him. They're going to lean on him a lot as their number one scoring option, their number one option on offense, period. You know, like, and they're going to want him to facilitate some and do all kinds of things. You know, he's going to be like a very, very supersized version of remember when they were kind of letting Vonleh bring the ball up the court last year and initiate and do stuff like that. I get the feeling they're going to do that with Randall, but they're going to want him to do that way, way better and obviously score way, way better and do basically everything better than Noah Vonleh did last year, who's, you know, a bench player. But that's kind of what I'm thinking for him. And that would be that's my main fear as far as a worst case scenario.
Yeah, I would say, and real quick, Gavin, I would say, one correction, he shot 34% from three. I said 40, shot 34%, but still a vast improvement to previous years when he was only in the 20s. So you can definitely see a more concerted effort from him to kind of spread the floor a little bit. You see him working out with Melo. He's working on his footwork as well. So Randall's definitely putting in work in the offseason. I would say, to your point, on the downside, you know, with those numbers that he's putting up, will they contribute to wins? Are those going to be winning statistics, or is it going to be more of a stat pad? You know what I mean? And to your point, Alex, definitely want to see him either maintain or exceed those assist numbers, getting the other guys involved, and obviously on the defensive end being, you know, more than average on the defensive end and helping out in rim protection with Mitch. I think if he can put all that together, he could definitely crack the all-star lineup.
Yeah, to me, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. That's the way he does that is, I guess to combine both of your answers, is by becoming a better defender, passer, and shooter. I mean, that's the only way this is doable. That's the only way it's sustainable. That's the only way it makes sense to have a team where Julius Randle is your best player. Because last season, I mean, there's some noise in all these numbers, but when you look at how the Pelicans did when he was on the floor with Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis, and when he was off the floor and Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis were on the floor without him, they were a lot better without him. And the reason for that was because he was one of the worst defenders in the league. And that's sort of been the story with him his entire career, and why he people would be like, okay, like, I mean, he's like fun. Like, clearly he can score, but does it mean anything? I mean, the answer has been a pretty resounding no for the first 4 or 5 years of his career. And then the other thing with me is, can he become someone who's actually respected as a 3-point shooter? Because last year he shot 34% on a large diet of wide open attempts. And that doesn't really do much for you. When, like, even someone like Rajon Rondo, who had like a season like a year or two ago where he shot like 38%, and they're all wide open. It matters when you can draw your defender out, when he can generate room for someone like Mitchell Robinson rolling to the basket. So, and to do that, he's going to have to replicate and exceed. It's going to have to be like 37%, somewhere around that mark. And then when guys are guarding him, if he can still hit 34%, that'll be pretty significant. And I think it makes this whole thing sustainable. So to me, he has to make some really decisive improvements, and those separate him from being a negative to being someone who's like genuinely deserving of an all-star berth because of how good he is as a scorer.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. I don't think I have anything else to add on Julius Randle, unless you guys do. Cause that seems like a pretty good point to wrap up the show at, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that was great, man. Definitely.
All right, so you guys CP, have
Yeah.
CP, thank you so much for coming on, man. Giving us so much time. This went a little longer than I figured it probably would, but I'm very appreciative that you came on. Why don't you tell everybody again a little bit about Knicks Fan TV, what you got going on, about everything for this upcoming season, where to find you on social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And thanks again for having me, fellas. Alex, you know, you and I have gone back a lot this year. We definitely worked together. And you were the co-host of the Sunday night post-game show, man. That was a great time, man. So hopefully you can come back on and Gavin can come back on. And it's youtube.com/KnicksFanTV. It's the home of the diehard Knicks fan, where we talk about Knicks news, Knicks rumors, and post-game live analysis featuring live callers from the fans. It's been going very well over the last year and a half or so. The support's been tremendous. And you know, it's just a platform for the fans to have their say, for the fans to weigh in and have their opinion on the team. It's been an emotional offseason, but it's been a wild ride. And I think the engagement has been fairly the same. You know, I was curious to see how things would change if we didn't get KD or we didn't get Zion, but things have been ratcheting up. And I think the fan base is encouraged by the pieces that we have. It's taken us 20 years to finally start to rebuild this thing properly. And I think there is enthusiasm and interest in seeing how this team kind of rallies around the young guys. And so, again, you know, the platform has been doing well as a result. And we hope to see more people on the post-game shows. We'll be getting started again in a week or so with the post-game live stream. So we hope all the fans will come out and participate.
Well, so as a testimonial from someone who's been on there and also just watched along, first off, you got to wait for your Locked On Knicks usually till the next morning. You got to wait for your posting and toasting recap till the next morning or late at night, whatever. What's dope about your show is that it's immediate. So, yeah, if anybody's listening to us here and, like, you want, you know, a fix on game nights, check out Knicks Fan TV, call in, text in, you know, whatever you want to do. You're good about always giving everybody shout outs and stuff as well. So, and I will definitely try to come on at least a number of times this year, although my Locked On Knicks commitments usually make that a little more difficult these days, but I'm definitely going to come on the Knicks Fan TV as well. CP, again, thank you so much for coming on and for taking the time to speak with us, and hopefully we'll have you on here again sometime throughout the season as well.
Fellas, thanks again. Let's go Knicks, baby.
Let's go. All right, and that's all for today, guys. So peace out. We got a very special guest coming up for you next time around. So actually, we got a lot of really good guests coming up. So I'm not going to sell anybody short. All the guests coming up in the next couple weeks are going to be phenomenal. So please keep it locked to Locked On Knicks. Peace out.